Blog Talk Radio.
Radio brought to you by Morelia Python's Forum. That's www.moreliapythons.com, where the chat is open and it's bumping over there. So if you're listening live and you want to go over and check it out and talk to the people over there, got some people like Paul Harris is over there. Let's see.
Yasser.
We got Chris Behoff, Dave Kelly, Howard
Redding. Howard
Redding,
which
got over
you
there.
Can't have Behoff and Howard in the same place for too long, the world will explode. So,
Yeah. We are back from ICAST, and
we survived.
Oh my God, what an awesome, awesome event! I got to tell you, man, hands down to. Buddy, Barry, and Mark for the job that they did. It was simply just a great event. It was educational, inspirational, emotional.
I think I hit
on all that.
It was a fantastic time. It was great.
Yeah, the first night when they had the awards was, you know, mm-hmm. the emotion and seeing the history of the hobby with Eugene and Trooper, just this talk that they gave and oh my God, it was just great. But we have Buddy and Barry, and we're not going to mess around. We're just going to bring them on because let's not
listen to us talk anymore.
they might have to go. But, hey, buddy, right. Barry, welcome to the show. Hope you guys are recovered, and great job.
Hey, thank you very much. We had a great time.
Yeah.
Good. It looked like it was a great time. Like, I barely had any time to talk to you guys. You guys were, like, I mean, Buddy was in the room. He kind of whipped through like a tornado and talked to, like, five people and was gone and then kind of whipped back. And then, you know, Barry, you did the same thing. It was like... There they were, there they go, kind of deal. You guys were bouncing around all the whole time, and it was definitely your labors were put to good use. It was definitely a great time, and thank you guys for putting that on and doing all you did. It turned out fantastic for the first go around.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it. We've been seeing all the feedback that's out there from on different forums and of course on our Facebook page. And you know, it seems like everyone was happy, which was our goal, to make sure that everyone that attended felt welcome and was able to get something from the event educationally, hook up with old friends, maybe meet some new friends and make some new contacts and kind of continue growing our community and to have fun and do some other adult things that we like to do when the stuff closes down or doesn't close down.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think I told you guys that you know, my expectations about the event, and I think it far exceeded anything I or we could have ever hoped for, actually. So there were some things there that that we wish we could have included some more people and had some different things that we had planned that we never even actually had a chance to execute because we were so busy enjoying all of the things that were going on. And I spoke to Greg Maxwell a couple of times since ICAST, and I mean, he summed it up today, you know, with one word, and his word really was magical. He said it was just a magical weekend, and
yeah.
He said it brought back so many fun feelings and memories and friends of things that he really, really missed and didn't realize how much you love and miss them. And he used the word magical, and I think that sums it up.
That's a good word for it. That was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a good word. I think a couple of highlights for me, I probably, besides meeting some new people and all that, I got to actually hold a Bolin's Python, which was just...
I have those pictures on my phone. I should send it to you.
Yeah, it was spiritual, man. That was just, that was pretty cool. So, I don't know, man. It was just a really, really, really great, great time. So, and the crab cakes were phenomenal. Good Lord.
Yeah, they were delicious, along with the...
I don't know,
you know,
just because I'm from Philadelphia, and we don't have things like that up here, or that's how they do it in Maryland, but good God.
You have Tony Luke's up there, so there's no shortage of amazing food in Philadelphia.
That is true. Yeah. I will raise
you
a cheesecake, yeah.
We did bring you some good crab cakes and certainly some food, and next time we're going to try and bring possibly some potluck-related items that we make.
Oh, fantastic.
That would be fun, too.
Absolutely.
All are good when it comes. The food was great when it came down to it. And like Eric said, you know, he and I both got to hold Bolin Eye for the first time, which is ridiculous. I got to hold a 100% diamond python. And then there was the shingleback. The room was full of animals that were just freaking phenomenal that you'd never expect to see. And, of course, having all the personalities in the same room was awesome, too. I mean, Eric and I were palling around with Nick for a good 2 hours before the show even started, or before the whole ICAST event even started. So it was just great to have that there. It was phenomenal.
Right.
Any one of those people individually, like Nick Button, alone could have been the whole show.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Marie. Exactly. I mean, any single person alone could have been an entire amazing weekend. And in the animals that everyone bore, Peter, Call, were absolutely off the charts. John Martin, every animal, one was better than the next. Julie, you all, best in show. I mean, where
yes,
can you
I
stop?
Did.
Where
I'm
can,
glad
where
you
can
brought
you
that
remember?
Up.
Yeah, where can you even remember? There's no end to looking. I feel like I'm still spinning around looking at things, wanting to talk to people.
One of the
neat things about the show is, you know, Nick was there, and he was speaking, but he was there. It wasn't like, you know, he was sequestered away from everyone, and, you know, you know, he was able to hang out with everyone, just like all the rest of our speakers, and I think that was one of the things that people really enjoyed was they were able to meet the speakers before they presented, listen to their thoughts, their research, their theories and ideas, excuse me, and... then afterwards, they could talk with them more. I know that, you know, Daniel Natouche was, you know, pretty well cornered in for a while there after his talk with a good number of people with even more questions. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to, you know, keep these people available and have them there for you. And you know, I think it worked out well. That was one of our plans, and at least that plan was executed well. And you know, we had a lot of stuff planned, but you know, we were at certain points we didn't really know what to do because we had things planned, but we saw people catching up with old friends, we saw people making new friends, we saw you know, things going on, and we were kind of afraid to interrupt a lot of that stuff. So we were like, you know, let's just give it a little while longer and see, maybe eventually the crowd will move to where it needs to be. And, you know, so it was really hard for us to break that kind of stuff up and to get people to go where they wanted to go. And,
yeah.
You know, but yeah, everyone eventually wound up pretty much doing most of the stuff, and you know, we took notes. We saw where we made mistakes. We saw where we were successful, and hopefully, you know, if we do this again, it'll be better. And you know, maybe it'll be even something new incorporated that you know you won't expect for the next one. So,
Buddy, you had some special ways of getting people to redirect toward lectures or rooms or anything like that.
Right.
So, you know, Buddy has some special methods and techniques to get the crowd organized and move them in one direction or another. That's what I recall.
It's called a crowd prod.
As promised, it was a backstage pass to the history of our hobby for a weekend. And Rico was phenomenal. Eugene, Trooper, and James, you know, Mark did a tremendous job, you know, as an MC through the whole event. And it couldn't have been more enlightening at any one moment. Each moment could have gone on. You know, John Romano did a fantastic job, and then telling his personal story, you know, with Trooper. I still have chills from hearing it. So.
Right. No, it was a lot of emotional stuff, and
yeah,
great.
Yeah. So we just want to thank you all. Do you have any questions for me? I kind of got to run. I haven't bathed since the beginning of this, which is not unusual for me, but it is particularly, you know, different now. And if you have any questions, I'd love to stay on. If not, I'll try and chime back in with you later at another time. But I got to scoot in a minute. So can I answer anything for you or?
When's the next one?
I'm gonna defer to Buddy, but I will answer you this. I'd have it tomorrow if we could. It was so fantastic. I can't wait till we do it again. So,
excellent.
Hopefully that's helpful.
That is helpful. That's great. It means it's gonna happen. So I'm excited.
I'd do it again next weekend in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that we, you know, I let you guys know how much, you know. We do this radio show, and it's a bit of work to get it going every week, and I can't even imagine the scale of what it took to do that event. So, you know, I just want to say that I really appreciate, you know, allowing us to have that opportunity, once in a lifetime opportunity, and all the work that you did, and it's super appreciated, because like I said, it was emotional, inspirational, and, you know, educational. So, you know, great job, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're a huge part of what we did, and I had the privilege of, when I came onto your show in the beginning, to explain to you that it's not what we do. It's what everyone helps us do. And we reached out to so many people in this event, and everyone welcomed it with open arms and helped us. And without Aaron, Florian, and I will forget to name many, many, many people that did so much along the way to help us, and auxiliary people, and Laura, you know, with me. We did everything. And everywhere we reached out, people reached back to help us. So I know Buddy will agree that we were swarmed and overwhelmed with help and support. And that's what this community is, and that's what's so special about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we thank you, and we thank everyone else, because they made the event. We did. Everyone there made the event. We just created the opportunity for it to happen.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. Wow. Everyone took you know, a big leap in faith, and you know, as if you see my post on Facebook, you know, we've never done anything like this before. We kind of thought about what we liked best about other events, reptile events that we have attended in the past, and try to bring all those positive things to the, make sure that those are all the positive things that everyone else could do at an event, and you know, kind of go from there. And you know, hopefully we will continue, and it'll grow. And you know, we haven't, you know, myself, Mark, and Barry haven't had our post ICAST debrief yet. We're also kind of getting all three of us getting our lives back together after, you know, you guys can imagine, the a lot of there's a lot of com- time commitments for all three of us.
Sure.
And so, you know, Barry has a practice. Mark has a couple businesses that he's run. I've got a young family. I'm in school, and I also work. So we kind of had to put a lot of stuff onto the side to make sure this thing went off right. And so, you know, we're going to sit down and talk about the future. You know, I think I don't know why we wouldn't do one in, another one in the future, but we need to decide, you know, interval and you know, think about how difficult it was for people. You know, a lot of people really made a huge commitment to be there. It's, you know, it wasn't, you know, cost money to get into the event. If you, you know, if you had to fly into town, you had to, you know, buy an airline ticket, and you had to have a hotel room. So, and then of course you had to eat, and of course you probably went to drink a beer or two. So it adds up, and we
right.
it takes a commitment, and you know we really appreciate, you know, the fact that people were willing to, you know, spend their money to come do this and be with us, and you know we're humbled by it. We had a great weekend. Everyone was very helpful, like Barry said. Every time I turned around, somebody was like, you know, can we help you do this or can we help you do that? And if you happen to catch me at the right moment, you did help do something. And I really appreciate everyone willingness to pitch in. And you know, and sometimes it was just every time I turned around, somebody put a beer in my hand. But I'm not sure that was a good thing or a bad thing.
Or moonshine is what
or
it came out eventually.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Moonshine was spectacular.
I'm so glad I missed that.
It was spectacular, and I'm not a drinker. It was fantastic.
Let me
chime in real quick, buddy. That's fantastic. I just got to run. The other thing I would like to say is I'm just going to piggyback off of Buddy, is that we helped, and Mark and Buddy, this was, again, their baby, and we, Laura and I, came along to help, and we formulated and put on this event for you. I had many people come up to me and say they can't wait till we do it again and offer ideas and thoughts about what they thought could be helpful or not helpful, what to add or what to take away. And I know that I know Buddy and Mark will feel the same way, and you guys. We would love an open discussion. You may email me, contact me, Facebook me anytime. We would like to gather feedback from as many people who were there as possible, and also those that couldn't make it and why perhaps they couldn't. And we want to put this together, this information together, and compile a database so that we can continue to make the event more accessible and better for everyone in the way that everyone would most enjoy it. So when we do it again, we want everyone's input.
Right.
Right.
That's a good idea. Yeah. I know that, that's probably the two biggest questions that I'm getting is when will the video be available and when is the next one?
that's what I've been seeing too.
You know,
when you guys decided that.
Right.
Oh, go ahead.
Just based upon what I just said as far as, you know, people making huge efforts to be there, you know, we're going to, you know, that's going to be definitely a discussion that we know, or maybe we try to come up with an interval plan of how frequently, you know, we can't expect people to do this all the time. So we thought maybe, you know, so there's interval, you know, we got to have the discussion about, you know, what do we feel is an appropriate interval? And also regarding the videos, now John Romano, one of our friends just contacted us and said, hey, you know, I do all this video stuff for other people. You know, I'd love to come down. You know, I'm registered. Let me come and videotape everything for you and record everything. And you know, if you guys were, you know, at ICAST, you saw this guy standing around with a video camera and, you know, had the speakers microphoned. And you know, John was on his feet pretty much the entire time. And then he also tried to capture as much stuff as he could in the vending space, and John did it all, you know, because he wanted to do it, and so, you know, he's working on it, I know, but, you know, one of the conversations I had with John is, you know, don't kill yourself to get this out of here, you know, take your time, you know, you're volunteering your time to do this for us, so, you know, whenever you have time to work on it, you know, do that, but don't make it a priority, you know. don't feel like you need to stay up 36 hours to edit video, because John's the type of person that would do that if we asked him to. But we felt that, you know, John was very gracious in volunteering his own time and his own equipment to do this for us, and we didn't want to pressure him in any way. And I know it's going to be the product's going to be good when he finishes up, and I think everyone will be happy with it. So, you know, just be patient, and we'll let everyone know as soon as that stuff is available and you know, how it will be available and all that good stuff. So, does that answer
awesome.
Your question?
Yep.
Yes.
Good.
All right, guys. I got to run. I'm going to give you a special thanks to you guys for everything that you do for us and for making, everything about ICAST so special, and we really, really appreciate it. So I want to thank you, and I know from Laura, Mark, Buddy, and I, we cannot thank Eugene and Trooper and James and Rico enough and all the people that helped gather all that together and to make this possible with them at this event. So it was spectacular. Greg Maxwell and Nick and Marie and Dr. Lily White, absolutely spectacular. So thank you for everybody that made it possible. Thank you guys for what you do for us. And give me a call, and I'll come back to us soon anytime. Thank you for inviting us.
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Anytime.
All right. Thank you very much. Y'all have a great night, and thanks again.
Yep.
You
thanks,
too.
Barry.
Okay. Bye.
So did you guys have any other questions
regarding
ICAST or anything?
Buddy.
Okay. I'm going to share something with you guys real quick if I could. One of my top moments for me was, and it was really neat to see, and while it was happening, I was just caught in the moment, and I wish I would have had a little bit more awareness of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we were all there. We're all, you know, I look up to Trooper, and I look up to Rico and Eugene and James and a lot of the other folks that are there. And so you guys know that my children came in on Saturday briefly to pay me a visit and eat lunch with me. And so at one point, my oldest son is surrounded by Owen, Eric, Josh, trying to think who else there, Jason, Zach, David Kelly, and there is, you know, a Bolin's python, a jungle carpet, a diamond python,
and a shingleback skink.
Josh Easter runs over and hands my son a shingleback skink. And so there's these guys in a circle talking snakes, handing snakes around, and in the middle is this 8-year-old boy who has stars in his eyes, and he is, you know, he's just completely amazed about the animals that are around him and the people that are sharing them with him. So now to my son, you guys are the Trooper Wash, the Rico Water, you know, the Eugene Bissett, you know. So it's just funny how you see this evolve. So you know, you guys may not look at yourselves like this, but if you guys continue doing what you're doing, you know, you're going to be there. So it was great, and it was a great experience. I wish I could have caught it at the moment. I did a couple of stage photos, but and I haven't looked at them yet. But yeah, it was a really, you know, one of the probably in the top three for me experiences of the weekend. So, you know, it was a fun time. I'm glad we did it. So our next thing is we're going to, you know, start talking about what the future is going to be for the next ICAST show. So I know it won't be this weekend, and I know it won't be in 6 weeks like Josh Easter has said on Facebook, but, we'll keep you updated. We'll keep you in the loop. And just like Barry said, you know, the carpet community really embraced this. The Morelia community really embraced ICAST. They came out in force. They were there as vendors. You guys were there as a sponsor for us. And, you know, for those who don't know this, Eric and Owen as Morelia Python Radio, they actually funded the flight for one of our speakers to come into ICAST. So that's what they did, sponsorship for us. And, you know, thanks, you know, you guys, because, you know, we probably wouldn't be able to get her to the show without you guys and your support and your weekly allowing me to come on every week prior to the show and talk about what's going on. And the way you guys just pumped the show completely for the past 6 months has been incredible. We certainly appreciate it. That we could never afford to pay for that. So, you know, that's your generosity, and it shows the true nature of you two guys and what this really means to you and what it's all about. So thanks again, and we really appreciate it.
It was our pleasure. It was fun to be involved and just to get caught up in it. So
yes.
At least for me. I don't know about Eric.
Oh, and you were completely yeah. surprised when you won Best in Show.
I didn't even know you guys were announcing it. I'm talking to someone and I hear Owen McIntyre Road Reptiles. I'm like, what? What'd I do now? I'm like, I was about to be like, I didn't break it, but then you're like, come over here. I'm like, what? And yeah, I didn't tell you, but I texted Chris like immediately after that the Scrub Hazel had won Best in Show, and he texted back, "See, I told you, screw your carpet python." So I'm like, oh, so it was one of those moments.
I'll let you guys know this, but the top three animals, two were carpet pythons, and it was the Moluccan. And then we asked the judges to narrow it down, and they came back with a tie between the Moluccan and Julie's Granite that she had there.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we picked someone that we felt, you know, someone who we thought would be pretty impartial to either of you. And we showed them their animals, and they casted the tie-breaking vote. So it's pretty interesting. And, you know, you had Rico and Trooper and Eugene there, helped doing the judging, a lot of chondro stuff there. And the top three animals was not a chondro. So
let you know
what we think of the carpet world. Pretty interesting.
Kind of not expecting the non-morphed Scrub Python to be the one to win that one. So,
well,
yeah.
I think if I heard correctly, and like I said, I was in a haze for a lot of this just because we were running, I personally was running on 2 or 3 hours sleep a night,
mm-hmm.
you know, a few days up to the event and during the event. So one of the discussions was that, you know, the Moluccan was the, you know, is the wild type. And there's been no captive refinement done. So I think a lot of that was how the animal looks, how great the animal looks, and what the potential for them in captivity can be if they're able to be reduced, you know, reproduced and refined. So,
yeah.
So it was good. It was cool. It was, you know,
definitely
fun to see that.
So. Very humbled for us to have that Best in Show along with. Yeah, I mean, there were so many great animals in one room, and to be picked by so many people that the opinions you respect of greatly, it was definitely great. You know, me and Chris definitely share that as a thank you, and, you know, we're not worthy, we swear. So.
So now that you have two chondros, are you going to split them up, or does one go to you and goes to Chris? How's that
already work? We already did. Chris has one, I have the other. So, and then we're making a copy of the certificate because he has the main one because it is his scrub, but I wanted one for myself too. So
sure.
Did
you tell everyone
that up.
You now have two chondros?
I did tell I did not tell everyone I now have two chondros. You know that the second one kind of looks like a scrub or a carpet python to me, so I might be able to make a case that I may only have one. So.
Okay. But the other one is definitely a blue chondro.
Definitely a blue chondro. So, Eric, I got an all-blue chondro before you did. How does that make you feel?
Well, I'm just glad that it's a chondro you can't kill.
Unless I drop it. Yes, dear God.
Take that back.
Exactly. For those of you who don't know, it is a glass sculpture of a blue chondro on a this – like crystally glass, I guess it would be a stick, and it's all coiled up like we all know the chondros that sit, and it's gorgeous. I mean, the craftsmanship is fantastic. And then I got another chondro. It looks like almost like an ornament. It's like, I will put this on my Christmas tree at Christmas time, I swear to God. So it was definitely very cool to get those and the certificate, which I was holding in front of Eric the entire car ride back. I'm just like, oh, what's that? Look at this. Do you see this? I mean, he's like, where are we going now? I'm like, I don't know. We're going to pull in there. Oh, wait, look at this. It's touching my leg. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Well,
yep.
Good,
all right,
good
guys.
Time.
I am going to bail out here. And
okay.
I might try to get over into the chat room for a little bit because my voice is starting to go out. It's been on and off since I've left on Sunday. So thanks again for letting me come on and talk a little bit, and we will keep everyone updated. And as soon as we know, you will know.
Okay.
Awesome.
Sounds good?
Yes.
All right, guys. Thanks again.
Bye.
Have a good night.
You too.
Thanks, buddy. We'll see you soon.
Okay, bye.
So,
yeah.
About the chat room, you do now realize that, like, it is like iCast times 10 in the chat room right now because Paul's there, Nick has arrived, and Josh Easter's in there, Yasser's in there. I mean, Howard's in there still. Hi, Howard. It's just kind of crazy amount of carpet people just showed up for the chat room. Crap, this is going to be an ongoing thing now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's good. They should. I'm glad that people are back over on MP and you know, checking it out. So cool deal.
Cool.
I guess I guess I'll hit on maybe a couple of the highlights for me. I have a new saying, and that saying. Let me back that up.
Okay, thank you.
Take my time.
I'm waiting.
The speakers were fantastic, man. They were really, really good. It shows you how much you thought you knew and how little you really do know. It was fantastic to talk to them. And when you thought you knew something and I guess you don't know it, the new saying for me is called "you're natooshed."
you were walking around doing that for the last half. Like, you've just been natooshed. I'm like, wait, what are you doing? So
yeah.
It took me a minute. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, that was Daniel Natoosh gave a talk, and he talked about chondros, and he talked about all his travels when he was through Australia and Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, all over the place there. And what was cool is he had a video at the end of his talk where he actually showed what it takes to actually do a trip like that, which I thought was really interesting. You know, you see all these pictures and get all the studies, but you don't see the 6 months of being stuck in mud and, you know, having to go hunt and fish and all this other, you know, things that go along with it. But it was really cool. Nick's talk was really cool. You know, it was cool to finally to meet Nick after talking to him for five years now or something.
Exactly. See, now when you were sitting front row center for Nick's talk, being a good little schoolboy, I was actually in the back sitting, and this is how cool iCast only like I was. I had Jason Balin sitting on my right, and we were sitting behind Ben. And every time a slide came up, there was a picture. He and I'd be like, "Ooh," and we'd all like, and it'd be like whispering between the three of us. Of like, I want that. I do want that. How much would you do that? What would you breed with that? I don't know. How would you breed that? What would you do with that? And like, it was like that. And like, every once in a while, like Nick would look at us, and it was almost like, "Oh, okay, sorry, continue." But like, you know, he didn't really freaking care. But it was just really cool to have those minds around me when I see a pretty picture of a carpet. And I'm like, remember you and I have talked about how like geeking out on, like, you know, babies are hatching. We're like, holy crap! It's like you're geeking out with some people that, like, you used to have, you know, I never thought I'd be hanging out with these people because I always thought I was just, like, way too below and lame for them to hang out with. So when I first started Car Pythons, I'm like, nah, Jason Bailey, no, he's way over there. So it was very, very cool.
Yeah.
Casper was cracking me up the entire time, too. So
yeah, he was a funny guy.
Don't do it.
No, I will do it.
Thank you. All right. Okay. It's a private joke, everybody. It stays between us. Next one.
Yeah.
So,
I think, you know, like I said, overall, you know, it was cool to meet some of the, because I pop on MBF a lot, but I'm more of a lurker than I'm a poster. And that's Morelia Viridis Forums. I know a lot of the names, but I don't really know the people. And it was cool to finally put a name with a face, so that, you know, that part was cool. I kind of like the mix of kind of both worlds, you know, because I like chondros and I like carpets, but, you know, it was kind of like you kind of got to be the mix. And it looks like me, you, and Buddy were the people that, well, Josh too, but we had the shoot-offs of Morelia, like, you know, the scrubs and the Bolins and, you know, that kind of stuff. But
which is cool.
Yeah, it was cool. I think there was everything but Owen Pelly's there, right? Pretty much. And Southwest.
Oh, I had Owen Pelly's in a box underneath the table. Why? You didn't get to see them?
No.
Oh, dude, you should have asked. I had them. Damn.
Sorry. But it was a good trip, and I look forward to the next one. But you know,
it was fun.
Yep. So yeah, you won Best in Show, and
I'm glad you mentioned that. Let's discuss.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I love it because I'm up there and I got it, and I'm looking at you and you're giving me this look of, like, of all the goddamn people who could have won this, you had to give it to that jackass. So, I mean, like, it was one of those things that it was, again, it was so freaking humbling, and I caught totally off guard. I was talking to somebody at the table. I didn't even know Buddy was doing the Best in Show award. And he had a microphone. All of a sudden, I hear my name and Rogue Reptiles come over, and I'm like, what? And he's like, for the Malukan Scrub, you got to win Best in Show. I'm like, I had to walk across the room to go over where the big crowd was, and it was, again, to be picked by all those people that you admire and whose opinions you consider to be expert, to have picked your animal out of all the ones that were in the room, and there were several. More than you can count, they could have easily walked away with that award. It was very humbling, and like I said, Chris and I are overjoyed with it, especially because Hazel is one of our favorites. And so if it had been one of the jerks that won, we would have been upset. But, you know, Hazel's one of our favorites, and definitely very nice. And he and I have had conversations about the future for the Malukan Project since winning at ICAST. Like, well, apparently people like them, so maybe we need a few more. So
now all you have to do is figure out how to breed them. I know the Malukans in my collection are some of my favorites, so I mean,
minor details about the whole breeding thingy. So I don't know, I feel like Chris has got to focus on the white lips, and then I'm gonna like make him focus on the Malukans too, and it's going to be like end up killing the poor guy. So,
well, you know, I just wanted to we kind of did this a little bit, but I just want to make sure that I hit on some of the highlights that I noticed and some of my notes that I took down. And you know, Friday night was it was a talk, and it was Dr. Lily White. He talked a lot about snakes. Arboreal snakes and snakes that live in this, like sea snakes, and the difference between them, and
he was also talking about how if you were to hang a tree snake upside down, that it won't actually lose consciousness, but a water snake will like pass out almost instantly, and all this other stuff. So it was definitely very interesting. Caught listening to it, and of course he's like, you know, we had to do all these things for research and science, and you may hate me for my next group of photos, and you know, he had a bunch of snakes strapped to centrifuges. So but it was, everything he was talking about was very cool and kind of makes you think about different environments, different evolutionary strains, and what each snake can handle. It was really cool. I eat that stuff up, so.
Yeah, it was neat. And then after he talked, they had an award ceremony where they highlighted, like we said earlier, it was Eugene Bissett, Yeah, Trooper Walsh, Rico Walder, and I keep forgetting the last guy's name. I should have wrote that one down, but I don't know if you remember it. Do you?
No. I remember his first name was James.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, yeah, that's all I know.
I'll have to look it up and, you know, apologize about that. But, you know, listening to those guys and, you know, you talk about Eugene Bissette, which he's going to be coming on the show in September, I believe, because I got
he
to actually
me
talk
up.
To him. And, yeah, but, you know, way back, you know, I say this story before, but way back in the early days when I used to listen to Reptile Radio, he used to go on there a lot. And he would talk about, you know, doing what you love and what you're passionate about. And, you know, that's really what inspired me to kind of work with carpet pythons and Morelia, kind of pushed me in that direction, even though at the time ball pythons were the big thing, kind of still are. But, you know, I kind of went with what I believed in. And I used that knowledge even when I was doing this show, like you know, a lot of people said, how are you going to be able to talk about Morelia for any length of time and nobody's going to listen and, you know, you're only going to get, it's going to be, not a lot of people are going to pay attention. But, you know, I did what what I wanted to do and I didn't listen to people. And, you know, that kind of inspiration is cool. And, you know, the fact that... just as working together with each other as a group and one guy does one thing and, you know, you should support them and, you know, another guy does another thing and, you know, we should support each other. And, you know, it was really cool, to talk to those guys. There was some cool stories, you know, that, some people stood up and they talked about, their experiences,
yeah.
Working for Eugene or, you know, one of the things, I can't remember who it was exactly, but they talked about how a lot of, I believe it was Trooper and this kid kind of, kept bugging him and wanted to work with Chondros. And, he kind of took him into his house and took him under his wing. And, you know, I thought that was really cool. And, you know, it's just that was a really very well put together night, so to speak, you know.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it was. A lot of you can just kind of tell how those guys like really touched a lot of people just by merely mentoring people and breeding the snakes they love and enjoy. It was very touching, very awesome, especially Rico when he got up there and everybody in the room kind of stood up for a good 2 minutes, giving him a standing ovation that he deserved wholeheartedly, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, the next day they had the Viper talk, where they were, you know, talking about how they have the Viper set up at the zoo. I can't remember what zoo it was, but the guy's name was Alan Cardone.
I believe Miami?
San Antonio Zoo. That's where he works, San Antonio Zoo. But it's really cool how they, you know, basically, I'm sorry, I'm getting distracted because of this. Basically, he talked about...
Stop reading.
yeah, right. He talked about how he was, how they set it up and how they tried to replicate a humid environment, but cool environment. And I thought that was interesting. We could probably
They're talking about the humidifier with the AC, which is something that, like, you know, Chris and I have had to consider with the white lips that they need cold and humid, which is severely dangerous in my opinion, but you know, all
right.
Right.
He gave his talk, which was cool. Sorry, I'm reading your thing.
Don't worry about it. Just keep going.
Is that is he 484?
Yeah, I think so. That should be him.
Is that you, Chris?
Yeah, I'm on now.
Yeah,
yes.
What's up?
What's going on?
Nothing much.
Discussing iCast and, you know, all that stuff you.
Okay, I just got on, so I didn't hear any of the previous talk or anything. I was trying to get some work done before I called in.
That's okay.
I figured I hear Owen's voice enough there in the week.
God damn it.
Good point.
Yeah, shit. Eric's like, me too. So, yeah. I see how it is.
Yeah, so... Yeah, the Nick's talk was like having the complete carpet python pretty much read to you, and that was pretty cool. And I thought that the questions that were answered went a little more in depth, and it was very interesting because it's one thing to read it, but when you have somebody that wrote the book and is explaining it to you, it's a whole different thing. So that was very. I really didn't see Dr. Rush's talk too much. I saw some of it. I saw the questions at the end. She does a lot of work in the field with Amazon tree boas and such, which was pretty cool. And then Daniel's talk, which that was the controversial spot of the night. Where
it was, from what I hear. You know, I haven't told Chris that one, but you know.
Well. apparently there is two species of chondros, possibly three. And when he was talking, he had mentioned it in his talk, and some of the audience had said, so that means that we're working with hybrids then? And he kind of said, he's like, yeah.
Yeah. That kind of threw everybody kind of wheeling a little bit, which is fantastic. I love those kind of scenarios.
Set off a whole room of people.
Oh, yeah. Especially at an arboreal symposium. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And then the other thing that he was talking about was he was talking about in the wild how small a chondros breed. You know, 300-400-gram females and, they're breeding.
Yeah.
And... again, there were, you know, well, I think the thought is that they have to be at least 1,200 grams, and I don't think they found any chondros in the wild that are even close to that size. But, there were some theories of why people thought that they were, but that will be a good chondro roundtable talk because I think Nick had asked if anybody had ever tried to breed them that size because I know he has, and he's got... success with that, and 100%.
Oh my god!
There was crickets, man. It was kind of cool and kind of crazy at the same time. But it was that mix of the two worlds, you know. But I learned a lot from that talk. It was very, very cool. And then there was the vending side of it. There was a lot of cool things there. I think, man. I don't know about you, what you think, Owen, but it seems like Scrubs were the hit. You know,
now that he's here, you can please go ahead and sufficiently bow to his scrub pythons. Go ahead.
Well,
I was starting to feel like you brought me on here just to rub in me not being there.
No. Well, you should have came, but you know it is what it is. Your loss, not ours. But
my presence may be your loss.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But people walking up to the at least to my displays, what I had, I brought a Barnack, and it seemed that people very interested in the Barnack. Of course, my Barnack is very calm and handleable, which makes it a whole lot easier. Also the scrubs that Owen had brought, your scrubs, people were gravitating towards and oohing and ahhing and googling about. But I do have to tell you, though, Chris, I did get to hold a Bolin's python, and it was freaking cool. Oh, man, it was cool. That's like the it was a religious experience. That's all I can say.
No, stop it. Stop it.
It really was. Just the way it moved and the head and the I don't know, man. It was just really, really, really cool.
It's kind of like a weird mix of the two, if you will. I mean, I held one at White Plains at a show. It was a little bit smaller, I believe, than the one that I saw you guys with. This one was probably 4 or 5 feet, but it's kind of like an odd intelligence in contrast to what the animal looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Its head didn't look like it fit its body. It's like, I mean, you and I, you remember when we first got the Malukans, I'm just like, their heads look so huge compared to their bodies. And the Volans seem to kind of have that same thing going on. It's just a big freaking head and then a skinny body. So it was very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I was also equally as blown. What's that?
Do we know that guy that has the, it might not be on there anymore, but that guy that had the adult pair on Fauna and Kingsnake, do we know who that is?
No idea. I haven't been on Fauna recently. I'm forbidding myself before I go shopping again.
It's a good thing to do when you don't have any money. Otherwise, you spend money that you never had in the first place. At least that's how it works for me.
That is true. I know.
Yeah.
That works for everybody.
Yeah, the also equally as cool was holding a diamond python. And I got to admit, I often used to say, how can people say that there's a difference? And after holding, it was a 19-year-old, I can't remember if it was male or female. I want to say it was male. But
I think so.
Yeah, 19 years old and still going strong. Just amazing, really, really
it
cool.
It was, and it moved kind of calm and cool and collected and, I had to pull the blackface wet lip out for a little bit that early that morning. So between the two of them, which was, calm, cool, and collected, and then fast, coordinated, and scary as hell. it was a welcome difference. So
yeah,
and I believe I said more than once that's why these things are at Chris's place, and if only he wouldn't lead with his face, we'd have no problems. So.
Yeah. See, but that's a nice conversation topic.
That is true. They're very good. Yeah. Ending fight. Nail him in the face 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So.
And the day that I lose an eyeball will be the day that I learn my lesson and I stop doing it.
Ah, crap.
I would recommend not doing that. I would recommend not doing that. But, hey, to each his own. Yeah, so I got to it was pretty amazing. The other thing that kind of shocked me, I see it on the forums and I kind of pass over it. I don't really pay too much attention to it, but the chondro carpet hybrid, they look really cool,
there.
Man. They looked really cool.
I couldn't
get behind it.
But...
Yeah.
I probably would never. Well, actually, I know I would never ever breed it, but it would be cool to have as like a pet in a cage and a display thing. It was neat. It was a lot different than what I thought it would be, but very cool nonetheless. So you won Best in Show. So how are you going to breed these things so other people can get them, man? What's the plan?
It's crazy. Maybe there's things from other breeders that, just haven't been shared because it's on the wraps. But, two of the guys that I talked to that were successful with it literally just threw them together and it happened. And I don't believe anybody's been able to do it twice.
In a row, right?
So it got me to start digging, and I'm sure that others have done the same research, but I've just been trying to surface it and kind of poke and prod people to start a conversation, and I did it mainly with my white lip run on the Morelia pythons, but while it is different, there are a lot of similarities as far as some of the things just from being endo species. But the only thing that I've noticed, and I would really love other people's input from this because I haven't heard anything. It's just what I found from some of the articles that I've read is that a lot of the endo, the temperatures never really change seasonally. So I'm really confused as to why people are doing a typical winterized season. Some of the numbers that they pulled, and I was surprised by one of the articles that I had read because they had some really extreme temperatures, like low to mid-60s and then mid-90s. While I can't imagine that that's the norm, they're still seeing a pretty significant high and a pretty significant low every day of the year, which is almost like our winter season. So if that's the truth, it appears that we're only giving their natural temperature range 3 months of the year.
Right.
So, while I'm sure there's other, you know, natural ticks that we're just not going to see without being there, without doing more localized research, the only thing that I'm really seeing, especially since, you know, being close to the equator with her locality, there isn't really a light time change either. It's typically 12-12 throughout the year. So if the temperature is not fluctuating and the light's not fluctuating, the only thing that I've seen is that there's a change in rainfall and humidity, and it's pretty significant of a variance from anywhere from, you know, 1 to 3 inches a month up to 10 to 12 during their season.
Right. I think the one of the things that I noticed when I was doing some research on Boland's pythons, and I know listening back to a past episode, Sean Christian, when he was on, he was talking about Boland's pythons, and he had said that his thought was is that they need to go down and burrow. And, you know, Ari and Mark had both hit on this when they seen them in the wild and they pulled the eggs off the females. The females were down deep. And I know Zach had also mentioned that he thought that this was the case. And I think my thought is that particularly with scrubs and bones, I don't know if this works so much with white lips, but the fact that the female is going through all the stages, you're seeing locks, but she's not ovulating, taking it to that step, could be that she's stressed out. We're just overthinking it. She's stressed out. She needs to feel secure. You know, as well as I know, dealing with scrubs, they're pretty they get stressed out pretty easily. I think because maybe they're a smarter species. They pay more attention to what's going on around in the room. But I think that if they had access to somewhere where they could either burrow or get down in a way and stay warm, I think you would probably see people having more success. At least that's the route I'm going to go. I'm going to try.
Now, is there anything anywhere suggesting that they leave, that they go more terrestrial versus arboreal naturally?
With scrubs, I don't know, but with bowens, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's definitely with them. Now, the scrubs, I guess, is negatable as well, because while I do maintain an arboreal setup, I can't remember if you do, but I know that for some of the individuals, David Means does not, and he has successfully bred them in terrestrial setups.
I kind of do a mix of both. My Moluccans have access to perches, and they use them.
My Moluccans absolutely never leave the perch.
Yeah. I noticed that they go through phases where they'll kind of chill in their bowl, their water bowl. Then they'll kind of just go up and perch, especially after they eat, they perch, which surprises me.
I've done one thing different this year that I really like so far, and my scrubs seem to be really comfortable with it, especially that nutcase patternless Moluccan that you saw.
Oh, she's so nice.
I'll do a, like I run a PVC perch through the cage, but then I surround the PVC perch with some of that big hollowed out cork bark so they can sit out on the perch, or they can kind of tighten themselves up into that cork bark so they're actually in an arboreal setting, but they're really well hidden. And some of them, like I think while it was on the ground, I think I showed you that one really young Wamina. Like, I can hardly get him out of that thing, but he loves
it. We never see him. Yeah.
He's really secure. He's really comfortable. So I kind of think that managing that up high works pretty well. But on another note, I'm really not opposed to the den idea either, because I've heard that from some source overseas. I'm not sure who it was. It traveled in through another friend of ours, but was that he had success with white lips doing the burrow. And what I wanted to do was kind of get a, I don't know, a 1x6, maybe even a 1x10, mount that on the inside lip of my cages so that I can go a little bit deeper and maybe do the, like a mulch dirt mixture or mulch eco earth or something like that.
Cool. I mean, I mean, the other thing is, like, if the bull and I like the burrow, I know that's one of the things that we're considering with the white lips as well, is burrows and things like that too. So maybe there is something to that.
I don't know. It's just a thought. It's just a guess. I was talking to Ben from Australian Addiction. You know how he does a lot with reproduction and whatnot. But for the female is not going to reproduce if she's stressed. This is not going to happen.
Right.
The hormones are going to be out of whack, and it's not going to work. And I think that with these species, they're so high strung that you have to make them feel secure. You have to almost like put them in a cage and make it away so you never have to bother them. The other thing that, I was thinking of you, Chris, with your, what was your Wilmina, right? That's in that really tight cork bark.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was talking to somebody about, I was talking with David Kelly with this, but we were talking about when I put carpet pythons. He had mentioned to me a long time ago to use paper towel rolls, and they'll eat, because I was having trouble getting a couple of carpets to keep eating. And I put them in there, and they went in there, and it worked out quite well. And one of the things I learned talking to one of the speakers this week is, like, when a snake gets in a hide box, they want to be snugged in there, and like they want to feel the sides and feel like they're smushed inside that thing. And definitely. made me think that, especially with your scrub and how it's locked up in that cork bark and it doesn't want to come out. Maybe the hides and stuff that we're giving them, maybe you might be onto something with the PVC, because if they can get into that and really kind of feel secure, maybe they'll go ahead. I think David used to keep his cages covered?
I don't know if you remember, Eric, when you were over, did you see my neodaces that were outside of the room? I wasn't using them, but they were the ones that had the solid fronts.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They actually were David's, and that's what he used for his Barnex.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The risk of, I don't like those doors, because you open them up and there could be a very angry scrub right there. So...
I can care less about that. I just don't like the doors because they're annoying and those cages are hard to heat. But if I had them in the right situation, I would love to bring them back. I think I'd like to mess around and like cut a window in there or something. But
absolutely.
I'm trying to find it now, and I just can't see who posted it. But somebody, Matt, this guy Jake Milbrand, I'm not really familiar with. It looks like he posts a lot, so you guys might know him from the carpet side, but he told me that Matt Turner said that he tints the glass on his cages.
Hmm.
Huh. That was another thing that was brought up that I believe Yasser used to do, and he's had success with breeding them, is that he would tint it so you could see in, but they can't see out.
You haven't had yet. You haven't had your Astro on this thing yet, have you?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
And I'd like to hear what brought that stranger back. I'm sure he's listening right now.
Well, we hope so. I mean, he is in the chat room.
Yeah.
Or he was.
Yeah, he was. I think he left.
Yeah, he popped over in the chat room a little bit, which is great. He was talking to Paul Harris for a while, and it was like, you know, I know, Chris, you've had dealings with Yasser even when I was first getting into it. You were sending animals to him.
I got my first Jag from Yasser back when they were like $1,500 for nothing.
I remember that.
I don't want to say not for nothing special, but just a coastal Jag and a good-looking one, but not anything that somebody's trying to put a different name on for a higher price. That's just how much Jags were at the time. And that that was my first dealing with him, and he made me drive out to the airport and get a Delta Dash because he's obsessed with his little critters over there. But
That's just how they happen that way.
You know, I think that for those who don't know him, as he continues to show some of his older stuff and some of the things that he's done, he's definitely an excellent resource to learn some stuff from.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I think that he may be onto something with that, with just the different people that I talk to and the fact that they're trying to make that female feel secure. And they had success, makes me think that that's kind of the major push. Because I find it hard to believe that they're really any different as far as temperature or anything like that when it comes to – because IJs don't really need that much of a drop, you know. And they're closely related to them. So why would they be different? You know what I mean? Like what would – why would they be any different than a carpet? It just doesn't make sense to me that they would need a drop. And
I don't know if you saw the post at all, but Ryan Young had kind of an interesting concept in regards to different feeding strategies for the breeding season, where I think a lot of people just choose not to feed, but he was curious if his females weren't carrying out because they didn't have enough nutrition. He said his blacks had the biggest follicles he's ever seen.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, has he bred those? Has he bred those? Or?
No, he's had a couple years of locks. I know at least 1 year for sure. There may have been some other ones. Actually, this post from Ryan says, for the last 3 years, he's paired them up, and each year they breed like crazy, and the female develops huge follicles, but she has yet to ovulate.
Huh. So is he saying anything about her stress level or anything of that?
He didn't mention that. The only one who really alluded to that was the one who referenced the tinting glass. And to be honest, I have a really good feeling about that as well, and we almost started to get into that, just not quite with as far as introductions. And, some people do reintroductions on certain species. I believe, you know, sometimes with the carpets, that'll get the males going. But with the white lips, it freaks them out for days when you put a new one in there and they get stressed out. They get upset with you. They get upset with the other one. And, you know, Yasser said he had luck with this piece with the golds. I feel like he said 94 rings a bell, but he felt that he had a lot of success from leaving them paired through the whole season to eliminate any reintroduction stress.
Huh. That's interesting.
So we got to put them together to see if they're compatible, and if they like each other, they got to stay together.
Yeah, I think so, and the compatibility, I've seen a lot of. Tom Kojan mentioned it to me on the phone at one point. Dave and Tracy Barker have mentioned it, that you'll just kind of notice. Like, you'll have a pair, and while you might not witness some locks, you'll witness them in the same vicinity and comfortable with each other, where others, they'll sit opposite sides of the cage no matter what you do to cycle them or prep them.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure that, as far as I know, I think that there is some chondros like that as well. that some are great matches and others are not. So, interesting. So what exactly is going to be your approach? I mean, are you just kind of, are you doing the drop? Are you doing the wet season feeding? Or are you doing it all?
I've had great years with every species that I've bred with a wet season, even if it didn't need it. I tried it with one species of cobra when I used to keep venomous, and it was a species that, one, nobody really cared about, but the few people who did never really had any luck with it. And I gave them a huge wet season. Like, I was almost pouring water into the mulch, and they literally no interest, soaked in the mulch, and never saw them separate. Realizing we're talking different parts of the world, we're talking different species, but I had that luck with some Australian species and, you know, a few different things. And while I haven't bred anything quite similar to this, noting the rainfall difference just in their natural occurrence, I do think that could be helpful. I would like to try a wet season. The only thing that confused me was in one of the articles that I read, it seemed like breeding was occurring in somewhere between August and October, and then the wet season was occurring in November to January when eggs were being laid. So is the wet season like helping us move forward through ovulation and such? I'm not sure, because as much as I should be familiar, I know my animals, I take care of them well, and I kind of know these triggers. I don't know the whole cycle that well, as far as through gestation, ovulation, follicles. I just kind of look and say it looks fat or it doesn't, and I keep them together. I'm learning a lot, because I am obviously working with species now where the, you know, while some people have gotten lucky with guesswork, we certainly need to be well documented and know what's going on at all times.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's the exciting thing to me, for the scrubs at least, is the fact that not many people have had success with them, and trying to figure out kind of what makes them tick. You know, that's exciting to me.
Eric, I'm sure you've discussed this probably tons of times on the radio. I just know we haven't really got to talk about it. But what prompted you to stick to some of the lower temperatures that you stick with?
What prompted me?
I thought at one point you had mentioned a theory that you believe that a lot of keepers are actually keeping their things too hot.
I think that... I guess when I kind of talked to when we had Terry Phillip on, I really thought that his ideas with body core temperature really made a lot of sense to me. Basically, the theory is that thermoregulation, is that a requirement or a necessity? And basically what he was saying, that in captivity is not the same as when you're out in the wild. And in the wild, it's a necessity. But in the in captivity, it's not a necessity. In captivity, if they're at their body core temperature that they want to be at, what is the need for them to thermoregulate? If you see a lot of Morelia people or a lot of Morelia breeders, or whenever they talk about their species, whether it's carpets, scrubs, chondros, it doesn't make a difference. but usually they're seeking out that 80 to 85 degree temperature. So I kind of embraced that thought. I really didn't go for the... if you would, the typical 90 degree hot spot with a 85 degree ambient type of thing. So basically what I did is I lowered it to an 80 ambient with an 85 degree hot spot. I kind of think that originally I kind of thought that
thermoregulation really wasn't a necessity, but with not really knowing a whole lot about what makes these things tick, I feel better giving the snake the option, because I think that my season this year or this past year, with staying with those temperatures, especially with some type of carpets, I think that they need to that cool down. I think that they need to get to 70 degrees to know it's time to breed. At least that's what my experience has been. For that female,
I believe that pretty well, and I've actually those two cages that I have that, well, they had your hound in there, and they had some Moluccans, and now they have that male barnack of mine. Is I've set that stat to 83, and when they're up close to the heat panel, it's 85 to 86, and when they're down towards the ground, it's 79, 80, and that's worked very well. Actually, I got one of my stubborn feeders to get on a regular course of meals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the difference with what, at least with me, with scrubs that I kind of thought about is the fact that these are closer to wild-caught animals, and a lot of the keeping husbandry standards that we have come from people that are working with, or we're working with, wild-caught animals and acclimating them to captivity. So obviously they're trying to replicate where they came from. But I guess the theory is, my thought is that I'm not going to be able to replicate Papua New Guinea in a box.
Yeah, exactly.
So I kind of have to figure out what is necessary. And what do they need in order to make them feel comfortable enough to breed? And that's the challenge. I think with the scrubs, though, like my Moluccans, because they're a lot of what I do with my scrubs is I keep them up high. They're high. They're the highest spot in my room. I don't keep any scrubs low. So they're above my, I'm not that tall, but they're above head level for me.
I think my elbow is almost above your head level.
Yeah. So there is advantages to being a hobbit, you see. So anyway, I've noticed, that was one of the things I think that, gave me success with the one helmet hair. I kept him up high. He kind of can look down at me if he wants. But when he's laying on the ground after he ate, I don't see him. You can't see him.
So he's more secure up there.
Yeah. Same thing with my Moluccans. I never really had a problem with them eating, per se. But I keep them up high as well. So when they're perching, they're looking down at me. And if they want to get away, they can, and you won't see them. So I don't know. My approach is just trying to make them feel as secure as possible, and giving them as many, let them pick what temperature they want. But to be honest with you, my scrubs, none of them are on any actual heat, just because they're so high up in the room. If they're high up on the perch, and then I have another perch that's lower, they basically can hit that 85, or they can get at the 80 on either perch. It's like a natural gradient without having heat. So that's kind of my approach.
I still have a little more homework and planning to do for the scrubs. I think I might have a shot next year with one of my pairs. My boy was a little small, but I think the white lips, I think I am going to do a little bit of everything. I think while I agree with some of the stable temps and it's worked well with my scrubs, among other things, I want to try a little bit of what I've been finding with these steel temperatures that they've discovered, just because I don't know that anybody's really tried to do something like that year-round. And I think that while 90 degrees or what have you may be a bit on the high side, it may be necessary if we're constantly getting cold at night.
Mm-hmm. Warm up to get through tonight.
I want to give that a run. I'm definitely going to do the wet season. I haven't given the food a whole lot of thought. It seems like Ryan has some pretty good insight based on what he experienced. If I do go that route, I might maybe try it with one pair and not with the other. And then the extra boy will rotate in, out, or it'll be a matter of compatibility, which boy works with the two girls, and that'll be what it is.
Yeah.
Do you, like, with as far as the food, I think that Ben. Talking to Ben about reproduction, and a couple times on the show he had mentioned it as well, but that, you know, I've noticed, at least with my stuff, is that if you don't feed the animals, they're not going to reproduce, or they're going to reproduce crappy. So I think one of the important things that I'm going to make sure that I do is I kind of do right before the cool down, I kind of feed them a little heavier. Then they cool down, I don't offer food. But when it warms back up, that's when I'll start giving them food again. Yeah.
So it kind of makes them. You feed the male too when you warm up, or do you keep him hungry?
Males don't eat in my house.
No. Right. When you warm up, the males are just obsessed with one thing only. Of course, we feed our snakes over here all the time.
Yeah.
Eric.
I just think that it's I think that it's healthier this is just my opinion. I think that once the snake gets to adult age, I think that it's important that as you're raising up that animal, I think that you should feed more frequently. But once you get to adulthood, I think that people overfeed their snakes.
I think a huge, huge key to scrubs and probably even white lips is that these animals stay very lean.
Yes.
We've seen, you know, multiple species of fat animals that slug out, and in these harder to breed species, it may mean that they just don't get anywhere, even as far as getting slugs. And I tell you, if I successfully bred one of these, I'd be super pissed if I got that far and got slugs.
Yeah. Well, at least then I would feel like I'm on the right road, you know.
But even in addition to that, I guess I don't remember if Cam brought it in or how David saw it, but he told me once on the phone that he had gotten some captive hatched Moroccan pythons, and he saw the female wrapped around the egg. She must have laid it after they brought her in, and that female was smaller than my patternless. I mean, she was really, really little. Like, we weren't even sure how she put out the eggs as she was wrapped around.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
No, I don't know if that was more of an exception than the rule, but it just goes to show that, you know, they certainly are capable at a lean weight.
Yeah. Yeah, I would believe. I think so, too. Josh is telling, I clicked over to the chat room, and Josh is saying that I'm wrong about raising up juveniles fast. I'm not saying to raise up juveniles fast. I'm just saying that I feed them more frequently. I'm not like power feeding them or anything like that. I don't
know.
Sure,
you're just kind of
that came out across
the faster metabolism that they have.
Correct. So I don't know if it looks like he's mad punching his keyboard, but that's funny. But that, hey, that's how I do it. But my adult, I mean, if you look at
He gave me the high five. If you look at my scrub, the one that I have, that I actually the one that I brought to ICAST, he's very small, man. He was he's a 2010. He's super lean. I feel. I feed him. I feed him when I kind of forget, you know, like, oh, did I feed him? And then it's time to feed him again. So I don't know. I really don't stay on like a schedule or anything like that. But
I mean, that seems to work well. Everything that David's had good success with, he's a fan of. You know, he's feeding every 3 weeks at best, and he's breeding these animals at 7-8 years of age.
Wow, there you go. You know, wow. And the other thing I thought about is, here's the other thing. Are we breeding them too early? Maybe they take longer to reach adulthood, you know?
I think that's probably the case with most things, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. Like, especially if we're working with things that we brought out of the wild, like I think it was Dave and Tracy referenced it. Well, first of all, I didn't think that an imported adult animal really would breed at all. But come to find out that apparently 6 to 8 years in captivity, they finally got an adult to go.
Right.
I think that we're kind of accustomed to the young age of some of the easier animals to breed, and unfortunately the impatience hits even the calmest of all of us, but we could be looking at 6 to 8 years on a lot of these things.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think the Bolin's python that Mark got to breed, they were probably 5 or 6 years old, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
And what were you told about the olives? I forget.
5 to 7.
And so. I've seen several times 6 to 8 for the blacks.
Crap.
I mean, I think this pertains more. I think this pertains more to the females than the males, but still.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I didn't mention, I probably mentioned it previously, but for the record, since we've been thinking of all these different breeding concepts, the only thing that I've ever been able to get out of David is he just gets them cold as anything through the season. Like, he got his Barnex down to 65 or lower.
Wow.
And that seemed to him the only thing that got the males ready and got the females all the way through the process. And as far as anything else, I don't know that he's done any other triggers. I mean, he may have the, you know, the security thing covered with those solid front cages, but I think that those conditions, the age of his animals and them being lean, is what seemed to be his key.
Yeah, he kept them really lean, didn't he? He never fed them.
Hmm.
So. How's the chat room going over there, Owen?
It is like stocked. I mean, it's ridiculous over here.
Yeah.
They were giving you some love a little minute ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly. It says 7 to 8 years, shoot me. So they were talking to you. Easter said something about how... apparently you're wrong. Raising juvies fast and then slowing them down tells that they're physically that food is diminishing and they should not produce. Growl, symbol, 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 you, Eric. So, but luckily,
love
Josh.
You too, Josh.
I know, Zach jumped in with symbol, 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 Josh. Then there was heart, you, Eric, from Josh. I mean, the fact that we get like such lovely comments from the shut up, Bill. It says, Bill Siegel, feed your carpet. I do feed mine, but sometimes that's a problem. It's we got a lot of diversity going on in the chat room. We've had some big names kind of sweep in and
kind of stirring things up and then run away. And it's looking like we're probably going to be doing this more often. So.
Very cool.
Yes. Very
cool. I think the thing that, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were talking about David and bringing his the temps down really low for him. But I think the key thing when you're bringing the temps down like that to avoid RI is, I know a lot of people are afraid of that. Is to make sure that the daytime temperatures are that they're able to warm back up, and you should not see that RI. I have not personally done that, so I'm not speaking from experience. I'm just speaking from what I've been told.
I tried to get down to those temperatures in the past. Unfortunately, my setups and rooms haven't really allowed me to, but I've gotten down to 70, and I've had no issues.
Yeah.
By bringing the day back up.
Now, do you do that even still during the breeding season? Like, are you giving them access to those basking spots during the day if they want to?
Yeah, I do. I mean, because while you're not feeding, kind of helps resolve some of the issues you could have.
Right.
But I still... Yeah, I still feel like we need to counteract those lows, because too low for too long, I mean, even though we're keeping the conditions kind of dry, I think can be an issue.
Yeah. Interesting stuff for sure. So when are you going to be starting your season?
You know, I thought about trying to mock their calendar in case there's any kind of, you know, picking the actual timing regardless of what the conditions are there versus here. But I think that I think I'm going to run in same timing as everybody else this year, just because it'll, while I don't want to make a huge seasonal change, the season itself at least allows me to get as cool as I'd like to.
Okay.
I would kind of like to do a demonstration of getting cool year round, but unfortunately until I figure out a better setup, I think the coolest I can get at this point is 78.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Unless we kind of move the weightlifts out of the room or decide that everything else can just, you know, die.
So I think for right now I'm going to run with 75 to 78 lows, and then as we get closer, I'm going to try and get a, you know, high 60s to 70.
Apparently on the chat room, Zach Baez says that light cycles, a small drop in his temps, and a wet season. That's his idea for scrubs.
Okay. I agree with the temps. I'm not really on board with the light cycle, because depending what locality it is, we're talking about equator species that never see anything but a 12-12. I even looked at the sunrise and sunset times, and we never vary by more than a half hour throughout the year.
Right, and then there's also the canopy cover to deal with in certain areas.
Yeah, I mean, I can't. I mean, while I haven't been there to see it, I can't imagine that a scrub often sees actual sunlight.
Right.
Direct sunlight.
Which you can kind of tell, that's why they have such big freaking eyeballs. So.
It's funny, and I found this by accident, because I really wasn't trying to piss them off, but. I'll go down at nighttime, and I'll go poke around with a flashlight at things, and sometimes I'll accidentally catch a face, and I don't mean to, but most of them don't really seem to mind. If I ever catch an eye of a scrub, it gets immediately alert, ready to go after me. Like, those eyes just seem to be so much more sensitive than some of the other things.
Huh. Welcome to the road. We shine light.
Could just be the pissed-off nature of a scrub, but they just seem to have a little more... reflective reaction there.
Interesting stuff.
We'll see. It's going to be a fun year.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Best of luck, man. I really hope you're able to do something.
I can't even remember why I did it. I guess it was because we didn't get these big goals yet, but I had sold one of my big male goals to somebody who's pretty local. I might even give him a call and try and get him back and just see if there's any value to these compatible pairs or switching out males or whatnot.
Right, because our other boy is nowhere near big enough for these monster females that we got.
Yeah,
like
he'll be a
him. Seal. Yeah. Poor Dash. Poor Dashy.
Awesome.
It'll just be the quote of the year will be like, what's your flavor of white lip? Who wants golds? Who wants blacks? And then I'll just keep saying that with all the pressure.
This conversation, I guess, summed it up for the most part, but I got that thread running for 5 pages, and I keep meaning to go back and kind of summarize. I've been trying to get between work and everything else, I guess I'm just too boring to think of something interesting, but I've been trying to just put something out there that just gets people to talk, because a lot of times we find things out by bouncing back and forth off of each other, and it's not even like we had an idea to begin with. It's like, oh, man, Eric said that. What about this? Oh, well, Owen responded to Eric. I got a question for Owen now.
Right. Yeah, I think we did get some of that,
but then the steam kind of went away because I kind of ran out of new ideas. And, you know, we might have beaten the daylights out of everything we're going to get out of the white lips, and I think I'm going to start a whole new thread on the scrubs. And while some of the information might be similar, maybe we'll get some different eyes since they're at least Morelia at this point.
Right.
I would agree. I think that I was actually going to do that because I saw that your thread on the white lips, and I thought it would be pretty good to have the same kind of ideas on some of the scrubs and something that people can refer back to and put their input on and different ideas and trying to unlock what makes them tick. So
I really want to. And I didn't really ask David, and there's got to be some other scrub guys, maybe even Yasser at this point, for how far back he goes with this stuff. I'm not aware of other localities, I mean, other than the hounds, obviously, that are difficult to breed. I mean, as a relative term, since they're all pretty bred in limitation, but it seems like Amethystina, for the most part, has been doable compared to the Moluccans, the hounds, things like that. So while we're still talking in those species, there's got to be something different in those islands that just isn't getting hit on the mainland the same way.
Well, one of the things that I thought with the Halma hares, really there's no information at all, really, on Halma hare, other than talking to...
Rob Stone, right, with all the hounds?
Yes.
Yeah.
Have we had him on? Because I always look at his stuff, and I've just never gotten him on the phone. But
he
seems like he has a few.
He's coming on 2 weeks from now? 2 weeks from now.
And
there we go.
He has?
I'm not sure. He has a pretty significant group, though, I think. He might have 3.3 or... something like that. Pretty big group.
I don't know if I'm following the same story or if I'm even following the story correctly, but I remember there was a thread on Morelia Python about some guy overseas that looked like he was going to have good luck with him, and then all of a sudden he disappeared off the forums. Somebody else that one of them ended up eggbound. I don't know if that was her.
No, that was... there's a guy in Canada. We actually had him on the show.
On the show, yeah.
Bill. He got pretty close with the hounds, and this year was the same thing with the Moluccans, but they both reabsorbed. I don't know. It could have been
these guys.
What's that?
That seems really common with some of these, and while there could be a number of factors, and I'm not too experienced in that particular area, but that makes me wonder if Ryan Young had a point with the feeding. I wonder if they need more nutrition to hold on to the eggs.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
Maybe some of your stress comments. And I mean, I think at some point, while there's variation of conditions, I kind of agree with your earlier comment that, you know, we've hit keeping conditions from so many different angles. I don't know that a few degrees in temperature and whatnot are really going to be the answer at this point.
Right.
Seems like there's more puzzle. Every time you kind of try to figure out a puzzle piece, you end up coming out with more questions. So
pretty much. That's why I wish I just had a room for massive groups of each of them so we can start to pinpoint each and, you know, without taking 10 years, we can pinpoint the different concepts in a few years.
Right.
Like with the white lips, I want to do, you know, a different theory on each pair, but ideally we'd have 10 of them and we could bang out a few things each year, but we'll see.
Go ahead.
I meant to mention to Ryan or somebody or even Frank, who we sold some of our blacks to, and you know, see if as a group can we collectively kind of do different things. I don't know that I want to do the same thing that Ryan Young's doing, even if he's successful, because there's so limited knowledge. I want to try something different and just see what our results are to compare and contrast. If we're all doing the same thing, I don't know that we're learning a lot.
Right.
Right. One of the things from the talks, though, I know we had talked on light cycles. It's kind of, you not thinking that they're relevant, but one of the what was his name? The breeder from the zoo that was doing
right.
the pit vipers. That's all they bred it on was light cycles.
Well, I think that I actually think light cycle can be very important, but important to the species that actually do see a change in light cycle in their native land.
Yeah, I guess so. But
they kept them in like complete darkness or something for 3 months?
Yeah. I think one of the things that he was talking about, Daniel was talking about, was the fact that I guess with the cover, overhead cover, they're not even really seeing the light. Maybe that's one of the things that they don't really get light at all. Or
so you should keep them
little.
In darkness and then show them light at a certain time.
They're probably getting a certain degree of daylight, but it's
right.
kind of like when you're in your house, you're getting daylight through your windows, but you're not getting the sun beating on you.
Don't you think that they have some type of idea that it's daytime or nighttime?
No,
just by the change.
That's why I don't think the life cycles are irrelevant. I just think with some of the endo species, it doesn't change as much. Where some people are doing like through their winter season, they're going down to an 8:14 or 6:16 or whatever it is, and then going back to 12:12. It just seems that naturally they're more of a 12-12 throughout the year. But the only thing that just kind of came to me, and you prompted it, and you may have even been going in this direction, is while that may be the natural light cycle, what are they choosing to expose themselves to? So like these animals that are burrowing, are they sitting in the dark for a couple months?
Right.
Right.
Could be. It's interesting. I guess unless you know like what's going on over in the natural habitat. I was really surprised that, and by the way, that I looked it up, that guy's name is Alan Carden, who we were talking about.
Gotcha.
Thank goodness for the website.
Thank God for old Pashos.
ICAST website. But anyway, he's the one that bred the vipers. But they're... His setup was pretty intense, with pretty much trying to replicate nature in a box, with the humidity and trying to what they were trying to do is recreate a humid but cool environment, and I think that may be the key. Well, one of the triggers with Halma Harris, because from talking to different people, it's basically, I think the Barkers were saying that pretty much Halma Harris Island is wet all the time. It's just constant rain, you know. I don't know. I don't miss my hounds at all. So I don't know, like, if that's a necessity or not, but I know for a long time that people said that... for some reason, they had to be kept warmer, So maybe keeping them somewhat humid. I do know, I can say this, that when I had them in a cage with an open screen top, their sheds were horrible. They didn't seem to, I had some trouble feeding and whatnot. So I decided to switch over to a tub simply because he was smaller. So I got one of those real tall tubs, kind of like a 28 quart size, but tall. And right away I noticed the difference. Now it's a lot easier to keep a tub humid than it is an open screen cage, you know? So I noticed the difference that way. So humidity might be a thing for these guys.
What I actually want to do this year, and I'm sure it's extreme, but I considered it anyway. I want to, for the rain season, I've even gotten as much data as far as how many true rainy days we have per month. I want to do missers on time instead of spraying.
Okay.
Huh. We're going all out for these waylips, apparently.
Yeah, we're kind of going there.
Yeah.
People that, you know, at the end of the day, it really may not be that difficult. It may just come down to compatibility and having the right animals. I mean, Tom Kojan, I mean, while I don't know what he is or isn't sharing, the only thing he's really had to say to me, even on the phone, is just that I treated him like normal pythons. And, you know, I watched him carefully, but I didn't do a whole lot different, and it worked out. So, you know, maybe it's just the right animals. Maybe it's the right animals are easier, but we do need to do all this extra work for the other ones. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll keep fighting with it until we find it. But I don't know that, you know, even some of the more difficult species, I don't know that we ever pinpoint the trigger, right?
Right.
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 I mean, even things that are bred regularly, there's still people that do it different. Do you, Eric, do you and Owen both prep your carpets the same way?
No.
Obviously, they're a little bit easier to breed, but now you can't look at me and say, well, this is the answer. No, well, this is the answer, because we have a lot of different things at this point, you know?
True.
Yeah, I think that the most important thing is that you have a lot of triggers. And I think that those triggers have to be hit. I think that sometimes people hit them on different, they don't even know they're hitting them. Like people that say they don't drop their temps and their room drops down because they're keeping it in a basement. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like there's so many factors in what goes into what's happening in your room. But I think that the most important thing is that you're watching what's going on with your snake.
Right.
If you're paying attention, they're going to tell you what they can do. It just seems odd to me that snakes, I mean, they're genetically made to reproduce. you know what I mean? That they want to do that. So it seems
they're supposed
silly
to
that,
do that.
Yeah. So.
I mean, there's got to be, everybody knows that there's several ways to get at the same result. Like you said, Chris, I don't set up and breed my carpets the same way Eric does, and we both still get eggs. So obviously there's going to be different, multiple ways to get to the same result. We just got to find which one works best. So,
right.
Yeah. Or at least one that works. Give me some eggs, damn it. So,
and, you know, as with everything that gets introduced, the more generations we get in the captive bred, the easier it becomes. So hopefully, you know, if we get a few generations out, maybe we won't need such specific keys and triggers.
Right, right. Be easier to play with.
Yep. It's almost like, you know, it could be dumb of me to go this far with an observation, but it's almost like captive generations start to lose, you know, a little bit of their intuition, I guess, for their natural environment. And while I don't think that's true for all of them, you know, that to me suggests why they would become easier to breed at some point.
Makes sense. It does make sense.
You know, maybe for generation after generation, all you know is the box in somebody's basement. You know, the outdoors has to get a little farther away, you know.
I mean, we've already seen that with Slate. I mean, even as a baby, we thought that he was going to be a holy terror. But being a captive bred, black face, white lip, I mean, I've acquainted his attitude to maybe a little bit more of a flighty carpet python. So
yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
Do you think in one generation
he's not as bad as? I think in one generation you can do a lot.
Really?
Oh, totally, totally random and not even relevant. Are you getting those waters?
No. The guy never showed up, but I'm going to track him down because I want him. So I find that Phyllis Fuscus again. Why? I'm a glutton for punishment. So and we're missing that at Elias's project.
Yeah, ironically, identical punishment that we've already experienced from the same animal.
Yeah, I know, because apparently we're just stupid. And then I keep staring at Savu, so someone needs to stop me from looking at those. yeah, you need to ban me from fauna again.
Yeah, I did see a lot of those popping up.
I know, and I could easily just grab a pair. See, now we're not allowed to talk about this. We're not supposed to talk about this. Fucking goddamn it.
Savus, to me, Savus are the coolest of the Liasis complex.
That's because you gave up on Mac.
I didn't give up on anything. I'm just telling you that for me, Savus are the coolest ones of the complex. I
do like their eyes and their build because it seems like Mac, but it's a little bit different. And the silver Savus look fantastic to me. I mean, something about them I love, but I'm jazzed to try to get my Max to breed this year. So we're going to try that this year. Hopefully we'll get Max, carpets, white lips, and, I don't know, hippopotamus. So
there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm like running out of steam, man. I don't even know what I'm talking about, man.
It's okay. I actually had to have a root canal on Thursday, so like for the past hour, it's been nothing but like sheer freaking pain. So
sounds like a good time, man. I was going to tell you that I had to run anyway and get some more work done before calling tonight. So
yeah.
Cool. So, well, I guess what we'll do is, Chris, thanks for calling in on a whim to discuss the white lips and stuff with the masses. And I'll see you Wednesday. I'll see you Thursday.
All right.
So we'll figure that all out. And we'll have to have you come back on when you and I can like scream from the heavens that we got eggs. So
sounds like a plan.
There you all go. Right. Good luck.
All right.
I'll catch you later.
All right, see you, man. All right. Let's see. I'm going to just quickly go through things, and we'll go from
do
there. Because I'm tired as hell, man.
Ow, fuck. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to go take a pain pill before I die.
The forum, www.moreliapythons.com. Go over there and always check that out, our proud sponsor. Big thanks goes out to Buddy, Barry, and Mark again for ICAS. I know that they said that it had everybody to do with it, but they're the guys that got it going. So without them, it wouldn't have happened. So big shout out. Give them big thanks. And for everybody that helped. That was involved in getting that off the ground. And for everybody that came, it was great meeting everybody and hanging out and geeking out snakes and, good time. So hopefully they'll get that going again and we'll be able to do it all over. Check out our website, MoreliaPythonRadio.com. And if you have any questions, comments, guests you'd like to hear, topic you'd like to have, definitely email us at info@MoreliaPythonRadio.com. We're doing the chat thing, I guess, from now on. Although Owen wasn't really monitoring it too much during the show. But I'll give him a pass.
I was.
He was in pain.
I am looking at it right now, and, of course, it's nothing but Casper, you know, apparently getting joshed about driving on the correct side of the road. And apparently they do drive on the right side of the road over there. So, yeah, some part of the chat is the chat. Other part is Eric got the magic potion. What the hell did you get?
Oh, I got their alcohol they left in my car.
Eric got the magic potion. Okay. That's why he's tired, everybody.
Yeah. What else? I think that's all I got. Next week we have, who is next week? I want to say it's, I can't remember.
It's not important.
I really don't remember. Shit.
It's okay. We have time. We can post this up on. Go to the Morelia Python Facebook page to figure out who's going to be on next week. We'll put that up once we figure it out.
Yeah, right.
See, there we go. I've just sidestepped the problem.
Good job.
$10 says that you've been drinking some tonight, apparently, according to Zach. Is this what you want to monitor the forum? Because apparently Dave Kelly misses his alcohol. Wow.
Sure.
We're taking Dave Kelly to Morelia AA very soon. All right.
Yeah, he's in rough shape.
Yeah. All right, continue.
Yeah. We got some cool shows coming up. I want to talk to I know who it is. Chuck Vogel. That's who's next week.
There
Chuck
we go.
Vogel. He was actually at ICAST, and we're going to be talking to Andros and about his Costa Rica symposium that he does. Then we have Rob Stone after that. Some of the upcoming guests for the show. What I have going on is just ebmorelia.com, and that's all I got.
All right. For me, you guys can go to rogue-reptiles.com. Check out all the happenings at Rogue, as well as Rogue on the Facebook page. We always enjoy having you guys come over there. Like us on Facebook. You see all the new pictures of all the very pretty babies that we're kind of having out there. We don't have any upcoming shows as of right now. We might in the next coming week, so definitely check back. And also you can go and follow Rogue Reptiles at Rogue_Reptiles at Twitter. Other than that, that's all I got. So what we'll say is good night, and we hope to see you all next week for some more Morelia Python Radio.